this is Beyond the Barracks, a podcast about the many and varied journeys of Australia's ex-service men, women and their families, brought to you by RSL Victoria.
In each episode, we'll interview a guest, sometimes two, about their life in service and life after service, exploring the many highlights and challenges that they may have faced along the way.
Beyond the Barracks is a podcast for veterans and their families to tell their stories. Sometimes we may discuss experiences and issues that some listeners may find distressing. Please check the show notes for support services.
We acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. RSL Victoria and the Beyond the Barracks team recognises the service of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, just as we recognise the service of all Australians. We are proud of the contribution they have made and continue to make to the Australian Defence Force.
Today on Beyond the Barracks, we are joined by Selena Parton, who I have found, I work with her at RSL Victoria, and I've just found her to be an inspiration. She brings an interesting female perspective to things, motherhood, defence spouse, and has her own service history. I think she's got quite a story to tell.
Absolutely. It appears she's been in or around, in a really meaningful way, the military for three or four decades, like three, I hope I'm not doing an injustice, but I mean, it's an amazing service. I mean, and as a partner, they're in service to our Defence Force and the nation as well. We forget that.
Yep, that concept of serving still, I think, is very much Selena in a nutshell. She is giving back to a service that gave her so much.
And some significant challenges in her personal life too along the way. So, really looking forward to understanding the kind of stoicism it takes to keep a smiling face and keep charging forward.
Thank you for joining us, Selena. I've been, since I told your story previously, I just thought you've got such a great story to share, both from the service front and service spouse front and obviously working within the veteran space as well. So I guess where we might be able to start is if you could tell us just a little bit about your background growing up. I believe you came from quite a sort of conservative European family.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in a small family. My mum's one of seven children, and so I have a younger sister myself. But my mum immigrated to Australia from Germany when she was a small child, and my dad came from the UK and they met in high school. I grew up in the Dandenong Ranges, and I think I had quite a sort of a normal upbringing, I suppose. We didn't have, a shopping centre down the road or anything like that. I grew up in a very small village with a milk bar, and that was about it. So pretty sheltered. I grew up, you know, climbing trees and riding my BMX and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, being an outdoorsy kid.
Yeah.
So sort of what led you then in the direction come the age of about 17 when you enlisted? How did that happen?
Well, it was Defence Force recruiting made a visit to my high school, essentially, and I thought that sounds like a great idea because I lived in a small town and it seemed exciting, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think I put a lot of thought into it at the time. So,
did you have is there a background in the family or an influence, or was the kind of origin moment?
Not really. Yeah. My grandfather did serve, my dad's dad did serve in the British Air Force for a short period of time, but I didn't really know much about that at that time. Yep. Sort of became more interested in that as I got older, but there was no parents or immediate family members that had served.
So inspired from high school, the Defence Force recruiters, what was the thought process going into it then?
Oh, look, I'll be honest, there was not much thought. It just seemed like a great way to get out into the world on my own at the time. And so I went off into the big smoke, as it was definitely for me, to come into the city, and went through all of that selection process and and then headed off to Kapuka as a general entry soldier. They didn't corps enlist at that time, so during my training was when they identified which core you were going to go into. And for me, that was Signals.
So I'd love to obviously delve into that more. But before we do, what was your parents' reaction about your sort of, I guess, spur of the moment decision?
Oh, my mum was pretty upset at the time. because, you know, their eldest daughter was taking off into something that they didn't know much about. And so for me, I think it took my mum in particular, a long time to sort of get over the fact that I'd moved out of home, but she's quite used to it now. But, yeah, at the time I think they were both very supportive. I mean, they most certainly didn't stop me from going, and but I think there was a little bit of trepidation because they didn't know much about what was involved and what was going to happen to their daughter. And, you know, at that stage, they weren't very educated on it, so they weren't really sure about what to expect from both sides of the camp. So,
doesn't sound like you really knew what to expect either.
No.
What was it when you rocked up day one? I mean, was it a bit of an eye-opener?
Yeah, well, it was for me. I mean, I was 17 and just 17. I turned 17 in January and I took off in May. And so for me it was more it wasn't so much what they expect from you. It was more mixing with adults that I didn't know from all walks of life, you know, having things asked of me which I hadn't sort of expected, the way they speak with each other, you know.
It's a new language,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, the swearing, you know, all of those sorts of things, because I didn't grow up in a household where there was swearing.
That wasn't the
as
norm.
Punctuation. So, you know, those sorts of things. I think that was probably the most shocking for me at that time. But all the other things, I mean, they don't just throw you straight in the deep end. So you sort of become acclimatized to it fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm. You were somewhat prepared. Sounds like you've got an adventurous spirit for a start to take that leap. Mm. Mm. And so I had the same experience, go to Kapuka. I was only not too far, but well, I was a little way before you. But you get there and then you find out what core you're going to. Did you have in mind a bent for a certain core or job, or had that crossed your mind yet?
It hadn't. We were given a choice of, I think for women, three different roles. It was either to go as quartermaster storeman, an admin clerk, or electronic warfare.
Yeah.
And for me, once I'd sort of been given those choices, I worked out what was involved,
yep,
what the salary was,
yep,
and whether or not I could pass. We had, obviously, when you selected electronic warfare, you had to go and do further testing.
Mm-hmm.
So once I just sort of decided that's what I wanted to do, I put my hand up to do the testing and went from there.
Yeah. That was in 96 approximately, was
yeah,
it?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that long ago. I mean, that women still had such a sort of small choice of direction that they wanted to go to.
It wasn't long before that RACs were, yeah, I think that's the right term, and then RANs, where they just had women went to like an all core and then it was sorted, it was, they were apportioned from there, which is, you know, wow, so foreign, and thankfully so. But hadn't come far, had it, you know?
No, but I actually felt happy to be a woman at that point, because there were only four choices. And the fourth choice was infantry.
Yeah.
So I felt that I had more choice than what the men did.
Yeah.
Because they were
okay,
more likely to be selected for infantry than they were to go into any of the other ones. So I know it was a reduced sort of list of options there. But for me, I felt happy about that.
Yeah, it worked
because
well,
as a female, I had far more options than what the men did.
And adaptable too. You could reframe and
Get
your thinking around that. And you went to SIG Corps.
I did. Yeah,
and I again, the parallels are a strange or curious. I wanted to go to infantry and they offered me SIG Corps and I think aviation as well. And I went, well, I want to go to infantry, you know, why can't I go? But I'm glad I did in the end.
What did you get from SIG Corps? I mean, you had to learn some languages, I think.
Yeah, so part of the training is obviously the language component, but Morse code, you know, learning about antenna theory, radio theory, learning the language of radio speak, you know, all of those sorts of things. So learning skills that I hadn't really sort of thought about prior to that, but, you know, also things like the most basic of things like how to type quickly and how to write quickly and legibly. So, you know, there's all those sorts of things.
Yeah, pretty good life skills, actually.
Mm. I typing is the – because I ended up in a
basically ended up in a typing pool doing the typing course. And I thought, how's this going to get me to the SAS? You know, I've got to say, it's one of the best skills I've ever learned.
There you go.
It pays off.
Yeah,
it does.
You went to but the testing indicated something more, and you went off to Kabbalah.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there was just a small group of us. I think there were 5 positions that were available, and another young fellow from my platoon at Kapuka went along with me and ended up on my course when we were posting into Kabbalah, which was great. So it's a tri-service environment at the school there. At the time it was called the Joint Telecommunications School. I can't think of what it's called right now, but essentially you have young airmen, seamen, and signalmen marching in and doing all of their training at the same place. And it's just attached to 7 SIG Regiment there at Kabbalah. And, we're living condominium-style housing, which was another learning experience, again, being popped into housing with people who were 5 to 10 years older than you, with a lot more life experience. Mm. So that was quite interesting. It was... For me, it was generally speaking a really good experience. There was a lot of time during my service that wasn't a good experience, and that really comes down to being a young female in the Defence Force. Mm-hmm. So, and I think my first sort of instance of that would have been at Kapuka, but that then progressed through my training as well. So.
And did that ultimately sort of shift your experience in service and contribute to your discharge after a few years?
It definitely shaped my experience and the way I thought about myself as a soldier and my worth and my contribution, and if it was as important as others that I worked with. And yes, it did definitely shape why I left prematurely. And I will say, you know, many, many years later in my last role, I bumped into, just through some things for work, I bumped into a warrant officer who's a PTI now, or physical training instructor. And through conversation, we both realised that we were in the same platoon at Kapuka. So for me, whilst it was really lovely to re-engage with her and catch up, it was also a really sort of big reminder of what I had missed out on by leaving so early on in my career. So, yeah.
And so just before we get to that, when you go to Kabbalah, you do, from memory, it's like a year or more training.
Correct.
And then you get posted. Where was the posting?
Yeah, so I did... I think it's 10 or 11 months of training at Kabbalah, and then my first posting was DSD, or Defence Signals Directorate, which is now Australian Signals Directorate in Canberra.
And how was that experience?
That's a really interesting experience.
My perception is you're working in bunkers. I used to go to we did a bit of what they used to call cipher, you know, with the codes, and all, it used to be paper codes and punching KY-38s and all this type of stuff. Very basic, hadn't progressed much since 1945, I don't think. So I've got this burnt memory of just big safe, you know, big, what do you call them, cold rooms or hard rooms with no windows, maybe some ventilation. And
if you think about working in a huge office space, essentially that's what it is.
Yeah,
but it was at the time a little bit like Get Smart, you know, walking through multiple doors with swiping your card. And so it is, obviously it's a bit different now, but at the time it was still high security. So we'd have to, go through a number of different procedures to get into the building. And whilst we do say it's a building without windows, they do have small windows. They just it gives you the impression of having a window.
Yeah,
but it's essentially being in a big concrete building, and, you know, it's not terribly exciting in terms of you sitting at a desk all day with headphones on. And
so that's when you're sitting and you're listening and monitoring to other armies and intelligence and things like that around the world.
So essentially it is the searching for, the interception, and the analysing of foreign signals intelligence.
Right.
And that will be used in the protection of Australian assets.
Yep. Super important work.
Yeah, very. And at the time, you've got to remember it's peacetime army essentially. Yeah. So it was of high value and high strategic importance. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a role that Australia played in our region and fed that back to Americans. We're coming off high engagement with Timor and going into Timor regionally off the back of Vietnam. So there was, I remember the time and in the Sig Corps, there was a real importance placed on that type of work. Mm-hmm. I didn't go as deep as you clearly, but there would have been some interesting things that you kind of heard and conversations. I know you can't talk about everything, but is there anything you can kind of, you know?
No.
That's confidential.
I've signed a document.
That's right. Okay. But we were talking off air. I mentioned that the parallels between you and I think continued because the SAS was a strategic asset. And even though we weren't deployed on operations at that time, we were deployed on hearts and minds. We were deployed on training teams that had a strategic overlay to them. So I think we were directed by a lot of the information that was captured there, or some of the information anyway.
Agreed.
Did you have a sense that the information was being used in that way? Did you see it reflected back in real time?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Particularly sort of around that time where, we were getting direct feedback at the time that what we were doing was beneficial.
Mm. Yeah, so, that's great, because you kind of work in isolation, I would have thought, there at times.
You are.
And in and amongst all of your amazing experiences in service, one of the things was that you also met your love.
I did. I met my husband whilst we were both living on at Duntreen. So he lived upstairs and I was a bit of a prankster, so we would play practical jokes on everybody that lived in the building, but he was one of my victims and became quite good friends and went from there. So.
And that's when you kind of started to decide to transition out of your service.
Correct.
Your experience sounds like you'd already had a few postings around and about. Now you were about to embark on, I guess, a journey of being a defence spouse. And that in itself opened up a whole new way of living, being posted around and about multiple times.
That's right.
Tell us about that experience. And obviously then you went on and had kids as well.
Yeah, we did. So I think we started our relationship sort of towards the end of 99. And in 2000, my husband had received a posting to Toowoomba. So
back to the scene of the crime.
Yeah. So sort of towards the end of 2000, I had my discharge sort of took place and I followed him up there, and not long after we became engaged and we bought our first home in Toowoomba, and we ended up living there we had a couple of back-to-back postings, so we were there for about 6 years. Which was, it's a pretty long posting by normal standards. So, but we'd bought, I think we purchased a couple of different homes during that time. And we also had two of our children, I think, before we posted down to Melbourne. Yeah.
Wow. Was it comfortable going back to southeast Queensland or kind of central southern Queensland? Because Cabala's out that way as well.
It is, yeah. So it's about, I think it's about half an hour from Toowoomba, further up the hill.
Yeah.
And about 2 hours from Brisbane.
So you were happy to go back there?
I was in two minds.
Yeah,
At the time, I didn't know much about what was available for defence families in terms of support, and I don't think they did a very good job of letting people know either.
Mm.
At that time, I think they do it a lot better now. Mm. But at the time, there wasn't much support for me, so I spent probably a lot of my time just with my kids and being a homemaker. I had a couple of friends that I'd become quite close with through military life, but I would say it was fairly isolated during that period of time.
How important were those networks then that you had to make every time you were in a new community, on a new posting, moving around, starting from scratch essentially? I guess your husband was away sometimes on deployments, away from home. How important were those networks around you? If the official support wasn't there, did you rely a lot on other families and military spouses?
100%. You know, when you move around from posting to posting, particularly in the SIG world, you all know each other to some degree. So the serving member, every time they move, they're always going to be moving into a work location where they already know people. So for the families, having those support networks around you is so vitally important, because you're not always going to have someone there that you know when you post into a new location. For me, I had no family just down the road. My husband's family lives in Queensland, but up on the Sunshine Coast, so they were quite a way away. But in terms of building a network, I know there is some official supports, but I find the Defence Member Family Support community homes or community houses absolutely vital in supporting families. They provide an area for families to come in a sort of low-key, relaxed environment with playgroups, coffee catch-ups, things like that, and it allows you to meet other families and network and, you know, just basically build those supports so that, you know, if you do have a partner that's away, whether it be a training exercise or on course or whatever it is, and one of the children become unwell or the dog needs to go to the vet or whatever it is, that you've got someone that you can call on. So yeah.
I've often said this of my, but you just continued service, really, because I think defence partners serve as well. That there's you spend a lot more time away than just deployments, as you've alluded to. There's courses and training and exercises, etc. So you were talking there about the network. Is that you're referring to, you know, the married quarters, the married quarters that physical, or is just the network of community network that's broader than that?
I think it's both.
Is that,
so, yeah. In terms of the term married quarters, we don't really have that anymore. Right. So there are some military bases that do have that, such as Pakapanyol. They have a really, I would almost call it like a fishbowl type existence, in that they're all together and it's a real great little community. But we tend to, nowadays at the different military bases, you're sort of all spread out. It's not necessarily situated on a military base. And I think that sort of can detract from that sense of community unless you put a lot of effort into to be a part of it.
Yeah.
But in terms of the community, there's a really strong community online as well as it being physical. So I don't tend to lean into the online community too much. I'm sort of a more in-person type person. But yeah, it's definitely physical as well as online as well. Yeah.
It sounds as though perhaps your own service ended maybe a little bit prematurely. Were you mentally prepared for that, and how did you find that kind of switch after a few years in service back out into the civilian world, and what path career-wise then did you end up going down, and how?
Okay, so when I left, it did sort of all come to a head quite quickly. You know, there had been some circumstances leading up to that point where there had been, when I touched on it before, some incidences and things that had happened to me as a woman when I was serving. So when that sort of all came to a head in 2000, I decided that it was time to leave. I staying in the Defence Force just was not something that I could continue to do. And having a stable and happy relationship made that decision a lot easier. Now, when I left, I went into telecommunications with Telstra for a little while. So that was something that I did until I had children. And then I did really spend a lot of time doing mainly volunteer work, but spending a lot of time just as a mum. I say just as a mum, but, you know, as a mum.
As a mum.
So raising the family. And then once I felt that the children were settled and I was ready to go back to work, I actually found myself going into fitness. So I had put on a lot of weight with my third pregnancy and my fourth pregnancy, and I'd lost it as well. And so the owner of the gym where I was going said, "Hey, we'd love you to come on board." So that's right. Literally how it happened.
You were poached.
Yeah, that's literally how that happened. So
that's like a mile away, no, it's not that far, I suppose, because it's a physical existence being in the military, isn't it? So is it always in your mind, you know, you're climbing trees, Danny Nong, join the military?
No, not at all.
It's just a big right turn.
For me it was, I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed the gym I was going to. I loved the owner. It was something that she encouraged for women to get back into work.
Right. Yeah.
So it was another one of those stories of women supporting women.
Yep.
And that's pretty much what happened. And yeah, so I started working there. Unfortunately, 2 years in, I became unwell, so was diagnosed with cancer, and so I was just unable to continue working in that environment. I couldn't sustain the energy to run classes or do any of that. So, yeah, I stepped down, concentrated on my health.
Yeah, pretty life-changing stuff that happened over that period for you. Would you mind elaborating a little bit about that diagnosis and the impact that it had on your life, on the kids, on your relationship?
Sure. So at that time, I was, you know, very happy. I'd been back to work, you know, working, you know, 5 to 6 days a week as a mum was fantastic to be given that opportunity. So when I discovered I was unwell, I was doing a community event with my boss, and my neck was quite swollen, and I was thinking, you know, I'm probably going to have to go get this checked out. And as it turned out, it was a reactive lymph node. But obviously I had several tests, and then they discovered that I did have thyroid cancer with lymph node involvement. And 2 weeks later I was booked in at Sydney having surgery. So I had to travel to Sydney, which was difficult because it was a 3-hour drive with four little ears, and dropped off and husband returned back. So, you know, we got through it. But I would have to say during that period of time, it wasn't so much having the cancer and going through the treatment. It was the loneliness associated with it.
Mm.
You know, having to go through that away from my family, not having my parents, not having my sister.
So you mean when you were in hospital for those periods of treatment that
But even coming back to Canberra afterwards, you know, just not – I mean, when someone's sick, you can – you go and you look after them. And, you know, from my parents' perspective or my sister's, they didn't have that luxury to be able to just pop in the car and and come
head
and visit.
Over.
Yeah, that's it. So but in terms of, you know, going to Sydney, doing the surgery, coming back – you know, trying to find somewhere to stay. But having said that, the military base in, I think it was Richmond at the time, put us up in the family accommodation there, which was really lovely of them to do, and supported us there, and which was nice. And but then when we came back and I had to go on and have my radiation treatment, I couldn't be in the family home because my little boy was only 2 at the time. So we had to find emergency, sort of not emergency accommodation, but other accommodation for me for, I think it was 5 days. And that's where RSL Defence Care come in. So they very promptly approved an apartment for me for the duration of my treatment. And it was very fuss-free. They said, just send us an invoice and we'll pay it.
Gosh, wow.
Yeah, that's great.
That sort of led me down the path of giving back and working in veteran services. So made me realise that there was so much more out there that I could be a part of. And
well, as if you haven't done enough serving the country, being a partner, and then that's that's amazing. So.
What how much of a game changer, I guess, was that support from the RSL? What would have been the alternative for you if that didn't exist? How much harder would things have been, perhaps?
Well, they were sort of ones that we hadn't considered. I'd been given a few different avenues. We contacted a range of different military or ADF support services that were well known to us, and they all said no, mainly because it hadn't been asked before. So it was very difficult for them to make a clear decision on something that there was just no precedence for.
Existing,
So that it was more I think I'd been given the advice to contact RSL, and it was probably the 6th or 7th organisation that we'd spoken to about it, because, you know, we were in a situation where financially we were well off enough but not quite well off enough to receive sort of any additional medical rebates and things like that. So we'd spent a lot of our savings, and I wasn't working. We had 4 children, so to have RSL come on board at that time and give us that support meant the absolute world, because I didn't have to worry about it, and I could have my treatment and know I wasn't putting my family at risk
with that exposure to the radiation.
Yeah, that's right.
I reckon it'll be a typical story. It's the RSL does a lot of this in the background. I've found it's my exposure to the RSL since I've discharged in the last nearly decade now. No, not 2019, not that far, half 5 years. But even before that, when I first came down to the RSL, started having something to do, all the work that's going on in the background that people don't hear about, and I know that that's part of this really, is telling the RSL story a lot better. But it's always great to have those stories come out because they offer a lot of support.
They do. And I think that was probably my first sort of exposure to what RSL actually does for people on a day-to-day basis.
And so I'm then obviously hopeful that your health improved, you had the supports and help in place. And then at some point you returned to Melbourne.
We did.
Was that on like a compassionate grounds?
That's correct. Yeah. So in the same year of diagnosis, it was just slightly post-treatment, we received approval for a compassionate posting to Melbourne. So you do have to jump through a few hoops for that, but we did what we needed to do. And we came down, I think, in November of that same year, and which was a big relief. It was a big relief to be in a location where there was ample health system sort of options, I guess you could say. Canberra doesn't have a lot of options. So having so many more options here was great, but also being near family and being able to have continuity of care as well.
For
so
sure.
That's probably one of the biggest issues for defence families is continuity of healthcare and education, things like that.
Yeah, because every time you move around, you're starting again with a new doctor and a new this and a
that's
new
right.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And can I assume you're back near Simpson Barracks. What did you call the area that?
Yalambie. Yeah.
I imagine there's a big community of people who work at the base there or bigger concentration maybe than elsewhere.
I mean, there is quite a lot of defence homes in the area.
Yeah,
and so you'll have people living there posted to, you know, Broadmeadows, Vic Barracks, Simpson Barracks, you know.
And which corps is your husband and where he's posted?
So he's in, so he's in RA SIGS as well.
Right.
He's in Signals Corps and he's posted to Simpson Barracks. He's currently at training command.
To the school out there.
Yeah, he's not attached to the school, but he is, don't ask me to say what it stands for, but he's I kind of forget all the different ones, but DCSTC, he is at Simpson Barracks.
That's
alphabet.
Oh,
there you go, Harry.
Yeah. Alphabet.
That one rolls off the tongue, but don't ask me what it means.
I bet you don't miss the acronyms.
No.
Although they help when you're doing signals.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Morse code. Yeah, I remember.
And the sad thing is I still do quite remember some of those. So
you do. We used to sit at the bar and do da-da-di-di-da-di, you know. And that's swearing, by the way, in Morse code.
Right.
I remember all of it. And what I remember about Morse code is sitting in the bloody jungle and because we didn't have anything else, no satellite communications. It wasn't there. So everything was by Morse on 1 watt or whatever. And just sitting under an umbrella is absolutely belting down and just sending an update of just nebula. You're on exercise, you know, and I'm just thinking, what am I doing? This is crazy. You know? I was going to ask, so where I was going with where your husband's posting is you're back in, you know, you're near this school of SIGs. You're back in, an extension of the SIG community. You're bumping into people from the past. Are you kind of reliving? How's that experience being a partner and a former
You do bump into people from the past.
Yeah.
I recently bumped into, you know, at the Melbourne Transition Seminar, bumped into someone that I used to go nightclubbing with when I was 17. So,
yeah,
it does happen. And it's quite funny seeing people that you mixed with, you know, at the High Court nightclub in Toowoomba. grey-haired and maybe a little bit more plump around the middle.
Yeah,
it's interesting, but it's nice as well. So to bump into people.
Lots of good memories associated.
There's definitely good memories, I mean, we got up to a lot of mischief and had a lot of fun. So
Your work now, Selena, you're with RSL Active. So that obviously was inspired perhaps by your own journey, your health journey, and the support that you received from an ESO. So how did that transition then go for you? So you came out, you were well and healthy, and you decided that you want to give back.
Yeah, so I started volunteering at my local community centre. It's funded by Defence Member Family Support under the Family Support Funding Program. And, you know, just started going to some local community events and then was asked to step up onto the exec committee, which I did gladly. And then was offered the caretaker role as the coordinator and then reapplied and was given the coordinator role. So that's sort of how I sort of started working in the support space and was working as the community support coordinator at Simpson Barracks for 3 years, supporting current ADF families, much like what I'm doing now, but a bit more hands-on working with the families and a sort of meeting with families sort of more than what I'm doing now, but similar sort of role.
What kind of impact are you seeing now with RSL Active? I'm assuming there was nothing like that perhaps going back to your service time. How important is a program like this? It contributes so much to a veteran's health and well-being.
So when you leave the Defence Force isn't just a job. It's a community. It's a lifestyle. It's everything. They provide just about everything to you, a home, a job, community, social circle, everything. So when you leave, you know, I know that door doesn't completely close, but it does close on you and you do lose a lot of that. So I see RSL Active as bringing back some of that community again. It's giving you an opportunity to meet with people with shared experiences, like-minded. They talk the same. They think the same. They communicate similarly. So I see RSL Active as a really fantastic way of bringing bringing people back together after they've left the Defence Force.
Yeah.
It's really important from a psychological perspective, peer support, and it sounds like we know that. It's intuitively we know it, but it's not – it's pretty recent, the research, et cetera. But hearing that other people are having challenges or going well or enjoying or not enjoying – is a huge support mechanism that we're really starting to understand the mechanism behind that. Intuitively, we know that, that it works, but and I think the timing of that is really important. Trying to get to transitioning veterans to let them know that hey, this is not just it's not only just catching up and getting together, and it feels a bit. This is actually really important, you know, biologically for you to be involved. And I was there with I've seen it many times. I was involved in RSL Active back in when it was being formed and I know supported by I think it was Dave McLaughlin was a big advocate for it. So it's so good to hear that it's in good hands clearly and really making an impact.
Yeah, we've done amazing the last 12 months. I think we had four or five sub-branches delivering the program on a regular basis at the end of last year, and we now have just clocked over 20. So we've sent 20 sub-branches on board.
It's expanding.
Victoria-wide, which is absolutely fantastic. I'm so pleased.
Yeah. And I just think such a nice touch that you can bring your own personal experience. You can relate in that world.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is so nice.
Yeah, it is really nice. It's nice to be able to sit down with a participant and say, well, you know, this is my experience. And, you know, those walls come down. So it's really nice to be able to share that with veterans.
And you have to come into the big smoke to do it, do you?
Not always. No. Although I am taking a group of veterans out kayaking tomorrow in Melbourne. Oh, but, we do hold events all over. So, I know I mentioned that I climbed trees when I was little, but I am scared of heights. So I think one of my most favourite ones was taking, doing a group out at the Treetops Adventures in Belgrave.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
out of your comfort zone.
Yes.
I think it would also be remiss of me to not ask you, Selena. You come across to me as someone who is very stoic. In a way, you've been through a lot from a health perspective, from your own experience in service, moving around a lot, all those sorts of elements. I'm just curious, your mental health, how have you managed all of this?
Oh, look, it's not been a perfect journey, obviously. You know, I've reached out and made sure that I've accessed mental health services, you know, over the last 20 years at various times in my life. I think it's really important and continue to do so. So, but in terms of my mental health and coming across as being stoic, I think for me, you know, I've been a defence spouse now for over 20 years and been I'm 44 and I joined when I was 17. So I've been in this life for, most of my life. So a lot of that's acceptance, you know, and we touched on it before, but it comes to reframing your experiences. And so that's something that I do every day. Mm. But definitely with the support of mental health services along the way, you know, it's not been straightforward, and I've known how important it is to reach out when I need to. So
thanks for sharing that, because it's one of the ways to breaking down the barriers and the stigma around singers. I hope there's a future or a world in the future where psychologists are like going to the gym.
Yeah,
you know,
agreed.
You don't think. In fact, when someone says I'm going to the gym, we know why, health, fitness, etc. But it prompts people to go, oh, I should go to the gym a little bit more. You know, you feel. Yeah. Whereas when we say we're going to psychologists, I do regularly as well. People don't have that same attitude. Oh, is there something wrong with you? And we've still got a ways to go with that. But the more people just, you know, make it, normalize it, I think eat well, train well, sleep well, debrief well as well, I think is really important.
I think so. I think connecting in before things get bad. So I look at it as, you know, similar to servicing your car.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, before it breaks.
Before it breaks. Yeah. So, and that's sort of, and it might only be a 20-minute check-in each week, but I think that's really important.
100%, yeah.
What a great message to wrap up with, I think. Is there anything else perhaps that you'd like to add or that we haven't touched on, Selena?
I don't know that there is. I mean, I could talk all day on the trials and tribulations of being a defence spouse, but it depends on what you would like. I think, you know, as a defence spouse, there are lots of different challenges. It's not just about moving addresses and changing, you know, postage return stamps. It's more, you know, making that dollar stretch, you know, worrying about having to buy new uniforms for your children. It's about finding new doctors and being worried about doctor shopping, you know, all of those sorts of things. There's so many things that are sort of wrapped up into the challenges that we have.
Yeah, they're enormous. And again, I think you know, it's thank you for your service twice. I grew up going to, you know, 10 different schools and living in married quarters. My mum, you know, was left with it all the time. My father was at sea and he was in the Navy. And my wife, Danielle, now has had it pretty easy. I know she'll be listening, but we were in Perth and stayed there for the for the duration, but she used to see the partners coming and going all the time. And I just don't think it's mentioned enough, you know, and I don't think there's much out there for people to access from a partner's perspective. One question I have for you before we let you go is, if you were to give us some lessons that you've learned over the time, you've seen it change from when there was zero support. Zero is probably not fair, but very little support, where families and communities fended for themselves through to now. It sounds like it's improved a lot. But if you're a young partner coming through, maybe with or without children, and moving from southwest WA to somewhere foreign in northern Queensland, is there any lessons or any overarching thoughts you would leave, or something you tell your 21-year-old self this end?
Yeah, definitely. My advice to any young family is, when you post in, regardless if you like the location or not, treat it like you're a tourist and really immerse yourself. Try to find something that you enjoy doing. Connect in with your local defence support group. Your first session might not be something that you want to do, or you might not meet someone that you like straight away. However, please keep going back, because you might just surprise yourself, and you're only new once, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I used to say all the time. You're only new once. So.
And you mentioned before too, there's some good social media platforms, and I'm sure the this generation's a bit more connected, but is there anything in it you've seen in the ESO world or RSL, is that that they would connect with, or
So connecting in online, I can't speak very well on that, because I don't actually do it myself. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes they have a bit of a bad rap with some of those sorts of groups, which is, you know, like all things, I suppose. But in terms of online community, I know that the RSL Active, certain RSLs do have their own RSL Active groups, which is really great, because they share their experiences, they share photos and give feedback to each other about what a great time they've had. And what I like about that is it shows people who might be just sitting on the peripheral what it looks like to get involved in the program, and hopefully that'll encourage them to come along.
So just to clarify that, RSL Active has a component of it where you want to connect the families and partners as well inside the program through the RSL, the RSLs that run the program? Is that where you...
So what you find with the RSL Active program that's delivered by sub-branches, so we deliver the program ourselves out of state branch, but then we also have sub-branches that deliver the program. We're seeing it more so than ever as they become better and more established, that whole RSL Active communities are being formed, which is fantastic. Yep. So Bentley does that very well.
Yep.
Altona does that very well. So does Warragul. They have a cohort that keeps coming back, and they all support each other. They all get along famously. It's really lovely to sort of stand back and...
Yeah,
and watch all that unfold.
And I think, just as a side note, I think one thing we can be grateful for, the 2 years of COVID lockdowns, is that some of those actually did land up online. So you can tune in to a few of the activities virtually if you can't physically get somewhere.
That's right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's still going for some events.
There is. So Altona offer an online yoga and art therapy class. That's still continuing post-COVID.
Thank you so much, Selena. I think you're just
thank you for having
tops. Me. Selena Parton, isn't she an interesting woman?
Well, adventure, prankster, tough, resilient, stoic.
Yeah.
There's just so much to this story, and multiple layers. Joined the military at 17. Then transferred out and was a partner, defence partner, children, and now she works back in the military ESO space, which is amazing.
And I just, for me, my takeaway from her is this idea of reframing things in life. It's putting the positive spin on things, which is my takeaway. And I think also just highlighting perhaps what we underestimate the role of the homemaker to be, that she has brought stability and continuity to her family every time she has shifted for a new posting.
Yeah, and the way she's gone about it is amazing. She said something, you approach each posting, or her message to potentially a new partner who's going on their first or posting, is approach it like a tourist. Get out and engage with the local community. Don't sit at home and sit back. Get involved. An amazing listen. I highly recommend this one, and particularly for the partners of, and if you've got a mind to transition from defence inside the defence community, there's a lot of lessons here.
Absolutely. Been a really great chat. If this podcast episode raises any concerns for you, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. If you're a current or ex-service member of the ADF or a family member of a veteran or someone who's currently serving, you can access free and confidential 24/7 support from Open Arms Veterans and Families Counselling on 1800 011 046. Current serving members of the ADF and their families can also contact the All Hours support line on 1800 628 036 for confidential support. RSL Victoria is here to provide assistance and support to past and present service personnel and their families. Importantly, you don't have to be a member of the RSL to receive assistance from RSL Victoria. You only have to be a current or former member of the Australian Defence Force, our allies, or a dependent of either group. To access RSL support, you can reach out to your closest RSL sub-branch or contact RSL Victoria's Veteran Central Service on 1300 MILVET, 1300 645 838.